Four Haines residents survive a plane crash, though one is still in critical condition in Seattle. And a Haines jury finds Ted Hart not guilty. It's the KHNS Local News. I'm Jillian Rogers. Those stories up next. Four Haines residents survived a plane crash yesterday afternoon and swam through five-foot seas to get to the rocky shore. Three were released from a Juneau hospital, while the fourth is still in critical condition in Seattle. The privately owned Cessna 180 went down shortly before 2 p.m. and crashed into Lynn Canal near Eldred Rock, about 50 miles north of Juneau and 30 miles from Haines. The U.S. Coast Guard got the request for assistance at 1:45 p.m. on Wednesday, according to Petty Officer Meredith Manning. The Federal Aviation Administration heard the Mayday call from the pilot, identified by Alaska State Troopers as Michael Makoviak. Makoviak reported that the plane's engine had died while flying to Haines from Juneau. The plane crashed into Lynn Canal and the four swam to a rocky beach north of Berners Bay on the east side of the canal in the vicinity of Eldred Rock. A Coast Guard MH-60 Jayhawk helicopter was dispatched and picked up three passengers, while a Temsco helicopter picked up the fourth. All were brought to Juneau. Manning said seas at the time of the crash were at 5 feet, while winds were around 28 miles per hour. The call came in at 1:45 and the four were located by rescuers at 3:25 p.m. Here's Manning talking about the scene when rescuers arrived.
All four of the survivors had swam to shore, and the plane was no longer visible in the water.
The Coast Guard also diverted a 45-foot response boat from Juneau. All passengers were seen at Bartlett Regional Hospital, but one was later transferred to Seattle Hospital, while the other three were treated and released on Wednesday evening. Harborview Medical Center spokesperson Susan Gregg said Thursday morning that Martha Makoviak is still in critical condition in the intensive care unit. Gregg said Martha is receiving round-the-clock care and monitoring. Troopers confirmed that Michael and Martha were on board along with two juveniles, all from Haines. Sean Williams is the lead investigator from the National Transportation Safety Board charged with looking into the crash. He said Thursday morning that once the search and rescue aspect of the accident was over, he began the initial phase of the investigation into why the plane went down. Collecting evidence is a challenge as the plane is currently submerged in Lynn Canal.
The NTSB does not do recovery. That's up to whether or not there was insurance or up to the individual if they wish to go after the aircraft.
Williams said without the plane to comb through, he will conduct interviews, look at maintenance records, and the pilot's flight history to get more clues into the probable cause.
And try and recreate as much of the information and as possible as far as how the airplane was configured, maybe what sounds or what vibrations, if any, that sort of thing.
If the plane is recovered, Williams said he will travel to Juneau to inspect it.
Yeah, it's a big puzzle. We have to try to put all the pieces together to backtrack and figure out exactly what happened and what caused this airplane to impact the water.
Williams said the preliminary report on the crash will be released in 5 to 10 days and a factual report in 6 to 12 months. Haines jury yesterday found resident Ted Hart not guilty on a weapons-related felony charge at Hart's retrial. The state accused 29-year-old Hart of knowingly living in a residence with a concealable firearm while on probation for a prior felony conviction, which is illegal. After Hart's original trial in April, the jury failed to agree on a verdict and the judge declared a mistrial. KHNS's Emily Files attended the second trial and filed this report.
The weapons misconduct charge stems from an August 2014 visit by Hart's probation officer, Sarah Dallas, and former Haines police officer, Adam Patterson. Dallas checked in on Hart, who was living at his grandparents' house. The officers found two handguns in the residence, including one in Hart's bedroom closet. State Assistant District Attorney Amy Page is the prosecutor in the case. She brought in three witnesses: Dallas, Patterson, and former Haines Police Chief Bill Musser. Dallas recounted the visit where they found the firearms. She said Patterson first found a handgun in Hart's brother's room. They asked Hart whether there were other guns in the house. Here's Dallas.
He said that there were going to be some rifles in a bedroom closet and that there would be a handgun that he had taken camping in the and on the shelf kind of above the closet, or okay, the shelf in the closet.
The rifles aren't considered concealable, but the state argues that the gun Patterson found in Hart's closet was. It was a .357 Ruger. Patterson called Chief Musser to the house. Here's Musser testifying.
First asked him if he was on probation. He advised he was, and I asked him then, I said, do you realize that you're not supposed to have a handgun in possession, given your status?
And what did he say to that?
He said he was aware of it.
Prosecutor Page emphasized that point, that Hart said he knew he was not allowed to have a concealable firearm. But defense attorney Timothy Ayer said, of course Hart would have known that. Dallas told him before Musser arrived.
MPO Dallas had told him, you're not supposed to have that gun there. So 5 minutes later, when Chief Musser shows up and says, you know you're not supposed to have that, of course he's going to say yes.
Then the record keeping of the Haines Police Department was called into question. Ayer asked Patterson about the two police chiefs who had preceded Musser, Simon Ford and Gary Lowe. Ayer asked if Lowe and Ford were good at record keeping, and Patterson said no.
Simon had very little experience he had been promoted to a sergeant after 2 years. He didn't really, and that was because he was pushed into it. I think his focus was with a lot of other stuff at that time other than keeping records. Mm-hmm. So I don't know that his was intentional. I can excuse him a lot more than Chief Lowe, who'd been doing it for 30-some years.
Ayer says that matters because Hart was on probation starting in 2012. Musser started as chief in 2014. Ayer said the state presented no evidence that the two former chiefs did not give Hart permission to have a concealable firearm in his home. Here's part of Ayer's closing statement.
You didn't hear Gary Lowe, you didn't hear Simon Ford say we never did it. So during the majority of the time that Mr. Hart was living here, we have no evidence regarding whether he'd gotten that sort of permission.
And here's Prosecutor Page questioning Patterson.
At any point when you were having contact with the defendant and you guys were all in Mr. Hart's house, did he show you any paperwork from the police department that said, look, I have permission to have that weapon?
No.
At any point did he say, but wait, I have written permission from the chief law enforcement agency in this jurisdiction who says that I have permission to have that firearm?
No.
At any point did he show you any written communication from Chief Lowe that said, I, Chief Lowe, hereby grant Mr. Hart permission to have that firearm?
No.
Did he ever show you a written documentation from Chief Ford that said, I, Chief Ford, grant written permission for Mr. Hart to have that firearm?
No.
Ayer also called into question whether Hart knew he wasn't allowed to live in a dwelling with a concealable gun. Dallas explained what the usual procedures are when a probation officer goes over conditions of probation with someone, but she was not the officer who had that conversation with Hart. Ayer said because the jury did not hear from that person, there's reasonable doubt that Hart did not know about the firearms prohibition. Finally, Ayer brought up the family and cultural significance of Hart living in his deceased grandfather's house and caring for his possessions. Ayer called Hart's mother, Harriet Brulette, to the stand.
In our culture, it's our practice that when somebody passes away, their belongings usually stay where they are, either in that person's house or somewhere appointed by the opposite clan, for at least a year while the family's grieving.
During the trial, the audience was filled with Hart's family and friends. Some of them reacted with outrage with the way Prosecutor Page questioned Brulette.
Your son's a felon, right?
Objection to hearsay.
You know your son, right?
I know my son, yes.
He's a convicted felon, right?
In Page's closing argument, she referenced the point that Hart was fulfilling a family duty by caring for his grandfather's possessions. She said he also has a duty to follow the law, and he violated that. Ayer told the jury that the state had not proven beyond a reasonable doubt that Hart knew about the firearms restrictions. He said the state also had not proven that Hart didn't have permission from one of the former chiefs to have a concealable firearm. After about 5 hours of deliberation, a jury of Haines residents found Hart not guilty. It was an emotional moment for Hart and his family. In an interview, Hart thanked Ayer, his lawyer.
He went above and beyond being a public defender, and I feel like justice was served today, and I'm going to continue to do well in this community, raise my son, and participate in healthy, activities that better the community.
Brulette also thanked Eyre, who wasn't present because he had to fly back to Juneau after closing statements.
I can't believe it's finally over. It's been over a year of stress. You know, every day you carry that weight of worry.
Brulette said, "It's over and it feels wonderful." In Haines, I'm Emily Files.
For KHNS News, I'm Jillian Rogers. Thanks for joining us this evening. You can listen to and read local news stories on our website at khns.org.